I had this idea that I was the only one who could make my product the way that it needed to be. And there were some parts of that were true, but ultimately it just had to get painful enough for me to challenge that and then figure out what some alternatives might look like so that I could get out of my own way.
I'm your host, Dave Knox, and this is Predicting the Turn, a show that helps business leaders meet their industry's inevitable disruption head on.
Welcome to another episode of Predicting the Turn. Today, we sit down with Chris Kirby, who is the founder of Ithaca Hummus. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
For sure. Looking forward to the conversation. So I want to start with your origin story. I heard rumors that you might have started with an ice cream scooper and a whole lot of chickpeas. So can you tell me a little bit more about your journey?
Yeah, ice cream scooper is correct. I started Ithaca Hummus with basically nothing, no resources, no budget. But that turned out to actually be my greatest advantage in the beginning. And even thinking about the culture that we have today, not having access to a whole lot of cash in the beginning, that really forced me to focus on the things that mattered most, which the product, it's getting people to taste it, and then ultimately selling as much as I possibly could. So I rented a tiny little kitchen for $250 a month, bought some big giant 40 quart pots, a huge stick blender, deli cups, a digital scale, and yeah, ice cream scoopers. And that was basically all that I needed to get started.
So start in that kitchen, getting going. What was that moment when you realized, I think I have something here. I need to really go harder at this.
We launched initially at the Ithaca Farmers Market. Then we grew to a nearby town, Trumansburg, and started selling at their farmers market. And then went out to Penn Yan, New York, to the farmers market there. And we built this network of farmers markets that we would take product to in our cars, in coolers with ice packs, and just sell as much as we possibly could, or really as much as we could physically make during the week. And it just turned out that no matter how much hummus we made, we sold out every single week. We kept increasing our production and doing things to make our little process more efficient and make more and more, but the demand was just more than we could supply in the beginning. But the first couple of weeks, I can remember it was really our mission to not let anyone pass by our booth in Ithaca without trying a sample. And that was such an amazing part of my journey because I had the opportunity to see people face to face and watch them light up when they tried our hummus for the first time. And that was a major proof point for me that our quality was a real difference maker for them. But it only took about a month before the line at these farmers markets got so long that we didn't have time to do anything. We just didn't stop selling from the minute we opened until we were sold out. And that was incredibly validating. But then the next big test was launching into retail. And our first two retailers were Wegmans and Whole Foods. And I can remember watching as the hummus just would, you know, fly off the shelf in these, quite frankly, competitive environments that I was a little bit scared of in the beginning. And that just confirmed for me that that farmer's market buzz was not just a fluke. And back in those days, and actually still today, I would visit multiple times a day the same store just to see how many we would sold in a few hours, and obviously restock the shelf and make sure it was looking pretty. And there's just no better feeling than that right there. The excitement from consumers, seeing that strong sell-through in the stores continues to give me all the confidence that I need that Ithaca Hummus isn't just a good idea. It's a total game changer for the whole category.
The journey you have, that's one that a lot of people are working in kitchens across the country, selling farmers markets on the weekend, and they have a tough time moving off of working in the business instead of on the business. and getting over the fact of going with a co-packer and other ways to build it. How'd you make that leap from going working in the own kitchen and selling at the farmer's market to finding a co-packer and really starting to scale the business?
First of all, I can really relate to anyone who's in that situation right now, because that's where I was for a lot of years. I had this idea that I was the only one who could make my product the way that it needed to be. And there were some parts of that were true, but ultimately it just had to get painful enough for me to challenge that and then figure out what some alternatives might look like so that I could get out of my own way. I could get out of the way of the company growing to the level that consumers were demanding. It didn't mean, I just want to be clear, just going with the first solution I found in terms of a co-packer, like you mentioned. I really had to spend a lot of time courting the one specific co-packer that weren't 100% ready to make my product when I first started talking to them. It took a full year to get them into a position where they were willing to say yes, first of all. And then we actually had a plan as to, okay, how are you guys going to do this in a more commercialized way that's still a perfect representation of the quality that we've become known for? And that involved things like squeezing fresh lemons, and not just cooking and blending up chickpeas, but cooking the chickpeas and then cooling them down all the way before they blended the chickpeas with all the rest of the ingredients, so that the heat didn't impact all the other fresh ingredients that we put in there. And those just were not things that were being done in the industry at the time. So it was, I think, really important for me to get clear on what exactly I needed to scale up in that kind of scenario. And then second, find the right co-pack partner who was willing to make those things happen.
Yeah, it's a common journey that a lot go through that. So awesome inspiration there. So let's fast forward now. You've gotten out of the farmer's market, you found that co-packer, and it's really starting to scale across the country with the great retailers. How'd you go find those first retailers and get in the door with the buyers at those kind of traditional retail places?
That's a really great question. I actually did not target the buyers at first, even at Wegmans, using them as an example. I went to my local Wegmans in Ithaca, New York, and I asked to sit down with the chef. Every Wegmans store has a chef, which is pretty rare for grocery stores, but I was lucky to have Wegmans in my backyard. And so I met Chef Mike and we sat down and we tasted my product, and I wasn't asking for the sale. I wasn't trying to sell him anything. I was connecting with him. I wanted his true feedback on the product and other products like mine that had come before and he had seen go from like a farmer's market type scenario and then ultimately on the shelf. I wanted to learn from him. And what that did was it made him a part of the journey. He ended up becoming one of our strongest advocates in those early days. And he eventually introduced me to the category manager for the dairy department. We didn't launch in all the Wegmans all at one time either. We started in just one store, and I camped out in that store, just like at the farmer's market, handing out samples to everybody that walked by. And one store turned into three or four more, and then 5 or 10. And then we got like a whole region. But that was the right way to do it, because I see so many emerging brands and small businesses making the mistake of going after that sale. And what they end up doing is they out-distribute their ability to drive trial and awareness, and that ends up a lot of times coming back and hurting them. So I can't say I did it on purpose that way, but it's how it worked out, and I'm really grateful for that.
Talent is a big part of predicting the turn. And as we talk about talent, I wanted to mention one of our sponsors, Hunt Club. Imagine the power of the best marketers in the world helping you to find your next marketing leader. That's the power of Hunt Club. Hunt Club is a new category of talent company that powers the network of experts, connectors, and business leaders to help you find the best talent. Let's face it, recruiting hasn't changed with the times. Hunt Club is changing the recruiting game by leveraging technology and crowdsourced referrals to find you the best people possible for your company. Stop paying job boards that don't work or recruiting firms that recycle the same active candidates. Partner with Hunt Club.
Diving a little bit more on that, the brand is really known for these amazing, unexpected hummus flavors. And when you're at a farmer's market, you can do that. You can experiment with a bunch, have people try a bunch. When you started going into retail, how'd you decide what was going to be that first hero SKU? And then how'd you make the decision to start expanding into new flavors?
The last thing that anyone needed, especially when I was starting out, was another classic or another roasted red pepper hummus. That it was clear that was not going to be our way in to the shelf. So I leaned into my culinary background and figured out how to take time-tested culinary combinations and turn them into hummus flavors that no one had ever seen before. Just like when I was a chef, my goal was to make people fall in love with food in a way that they never thought possible before. And in order to do that, all of our products have to have that wow factor. And so you take a flavor that we actually launched recently, French onion hummus, for example, you would never think of that. But once you try it, you don't want to stop eating it. And because it's so new and different, you're actually excited to tell your friends and family about this new amazing product that you just tried. So that's been important from day one. Once we land on what those flavors are going to be, we have a concept and we start becoming obsessed over getting the taste and texture just right. We might talk in a minute here about a new flavor that we've got coming out, olive oil and sea salt. It hasn't launched yet, but when we name a flavor like that, we call it olive oil and sea salt. It has to taste like olive oil and sea salt. It is the most important promise that we make to the consumer. The product has to deliver or the concept just doesn't work for us. The old Willy Wonka example, the snozzberries have to taste like snozzberries. That's the secret that has made Ithaca hummus successful.
So with that, you mentioned the new flavor that you've got coming down the pipe, and that's going to be a collaboration. What led you to want to do a collaboration on that versus just call it olive oil and sea salt?
Yes. So as you mentioned, we've got this olive oil and sea salt flavor, which is a collaboration with another one of America's hottest CPG brands right now, Graza. So it feels like you really can't go anywhere on social media these days without getting clobbered over the head with the seed oil debate. And so instead of choosing sides on that, we decided to just lean into the ingredient that pretty much everyone agrees on and everyone loves, which is olive oil. But in Ithaca fashion, the way we do things, we didn't want to just make hummus with olive oil in it. We wanted the flavor and everything about the concept to just scream olive oil, from what we called it to the packaging and obviously the taste. And once we made that decision, it was clear exactly what we needed to do to really set it over the top. And I immediately phoned up my friend Alan over at Graza, and we decided we were going to do it together. And as a result, I think it's going to launch in an even bigger and better and bolder way than we could have pulled off on our own, quite frankly. And Graza is a great partner for us because they share the same DNA. We're both shaking up our categories with great quality products, disruptive packaging. And just like we've elevated hummus, they're doing the same with olive oil. So it was really a win situation for both brands.
So when you think about innovation, you've got waves, as you mentioned, flavors going. Are you trying to catch the wave, or are you hoping for opportunities to set the wave and be a trendsetter of the next flavor profiles?
Yeah, really love the way you're thinking about that, because that's how we think about it. We want to be the first mover in a new flavor. It's where we're comfortable. And I think that's where the biggest opportunity for growth is. And when I say growth, I don't just mean for Ithaca Hummus, but for our consumer. We want to push people outside of their comfort zone, because I think we all know deep down inside, that's where the excitement in life is. And you don't do that by copying what other people are doing. So no question, we want to be the first, and we want to catch the wave before it really starts to break.
Think about that unique way of doing business, the Ithaca way. Every brand today talks about omnichannel and direct consumer and our e-commerce presence. You've chosen to go all in on retail. What led you to thinking about zigging when maybe others were zagging?
Great question again. When you think about a perishable product like hummus, grocery stores are really the dominant channel. And that's for a reason, right? It's the most efficient channel for getting refrigerated products to the consumer. And that's not to say that we didn't look at direct-to-consumer options, because very elusive. I love all the data that some of my friends who are part of direct-to-consumer brands have access to, specifically about the consumer. So we looked at it, but in the end, it was just too wasteful, too inefficient, and too cost prohibitive for the consumer for us to really get behind. So yeah, we're definitely all in on retail, because it is the biggest and most efficient channel for our specific product. So that means it's absolutely vital for us to cultivate these deep, longstanding partnerships with retailers to make sure our products are accessible and visible and in demand for them. So we approach every partnership to help category managers understand how our brand can unlock growth for their category. And our job is to validate why we deserve premium shelf placement by simply driving incremental sales for them through the promotions and the sampling and the creative merchandising that we do, and ultimately trading up the consumer to a more premium product they're happy to pay full price for. I will say that some of the similarities, actually, like D2C brands are always talking about customer acquisition cost and lifetime value. And the calculus is really the same, even though it's a different channel in brick and mortar retail for the brand, at least. So when you've got a product with the wow factor, like I think we do, and I'm biased, that drives loyalty, because consumers can't get the same experience anywhere else. So it's a no-brainer for us to invest upfront in trial and awareness, because the math works. And that's what retailers need to see from the brands they carry. And that's how we ultimately cultivate these relationships with them over time.
We've talked a lot about how you really differentiate a lot by flavor. When you look at other products in your category, they're also very similar in packaging. Yet you guys have chosen kind of unique from your packaging approach. What led you to that choice?
So it's a funny story. When we moved over from self-manufacturing to co-packing, the co-packer, they were like 80% of the way there. One of the things in the 20% bucket was they did not have filling equipment to fill in the containers that we were in. We were in a round. They had square. And we looked at that as like, all right, do we get new tooling here? Do we stay in the same packaging? Or do we take a little bit of a risk here? Don't move into a square tub, but also at the same time, really help our brand and our product stand out on the shelf. And obviously that's the decision that we made. And it was a great decision, it turned out. Our square white packaging is really disruptive. It really stands out among the sea of sameness of all the round hummus containers on the shelf. I would say the shape and color alone go a long way to attract attention. But then you add the high resolution ingredient imagery and the bold font colors that we use. And the result is a very clear signal to the consumer that they're in for something new and different when they pick up a tub of Ithaca. So it was not intentional, but in this crowded landscape of modern retailer, it's not enough to just have a great tasting product. The best brands are also creating visual and emotional connection with the consumer. And I think our packaging goes a long way in doing that for us.
With all the success you've had on the brand, where do you go next for Ithaca overall?
So our future is all about growth, and innovation is at the heart of what we do. And we want to do those things all while staying true to the quality that makes our product and has made our products unique from the beginning. This year, in 2025, we're expanding into more grocery stores with Kroger, Target, Costco, and some other great major national retail chains that are rolling out this year. We are always, of course, exploring new and exciting flavor profiles that push the boundaries of what people have come to expect from hummus. And as I mentioned, we've got the Graza collab rolling out in March at Whole Foods, and then continuing to roll out through the summer with most national retail chains as well. But then longer term, our goal is really bigger than just making great hummus and salsa. I want Ithaca to inspire people to step outside their comfort zones, not just in food, but in life in general. So whether that's trying a bold new flavor or taking a chance on a dream or something that they've always wanted to do, we hope our brand serves as a reminder that growth and discovery happen when you embrace things that are unfamiliar to you.
So when you think about your journey as an entrepreneur over these years, from those first farmers markets in Ithaca to now being on these amazing retail shelves, what's the lesson that you want to tell to entrepreneurs that are following in your footsteps and aspiring for the same thing?
I've built a handful of those, a lot of scar tissue over the years. So I think a really good one is stay resilient. Most entrepreneurs and most companies don't fail, they give up. And you're going to get knocked down. You just have to get back up one more time than you get knocked down. Entrepreneurship is absolutely, it's the wildest roller coaster ride you will ever take. And setbacks are going to come on a daily basis a lot of times. But if you can stay focused on your mission and you can adapt and you can keep moving forward and you can keep getting up every time you get knocked down, you'll figure out a way. So my advice is to stay resilient.
I think that's the perfect place to bring this to a close. So really appreciate you sharing the journey of building Ithaca and all those lessons for other entrepreneurs.
Oh, it's been my absolute honor and pleasure, Dave. Thank you again for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, hit that rating and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more resources, head over to predictingtheturn.com.